Welcome back to the Inner Fight Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've had a fantastic week since we last spoke. Also, hope you enjoyed last week's show. Thank you very much for all the feedback I've had. This is episode number 691, where I get to speak to a gentleman from the United States of America, Brian Bergford. Brian's journey was actually, it's super interesting, really cool story. I was fascinated by a couple of different things in this show. Firstly, that he is the first certified dog trainer that I've ever had on the show. He's written a book about it as well. You might want to check that out. And secondly, about his study of psychology and his particular interest in neuroscience. And that's kind of a few of the different things that we dig into in this show. So super great conversation, really nice guy. He did keep me up. We recorded this one at like 7 p.m. So if I'm not totally on form, you'll have to excuse me. But that is one of the things in dealing with these great gentlemen from America. I hope you're all having a fantastic week. Looking forward to what's to come for you over the weekend if you've got big plans. And if you don't, I hope you have a nice weekend anyway. Thank you very much for tuning into the show. And no matter where you are in the world, let's jump into today's show. Brian, good morning, good evening. How are you, brother?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Good evening to you. Good morning to me, right? Time zone, man.
Isn't it? I appreciate you you flexing with your time, mate, and making it back, as you were just saying, from your swim session. How was it?
It was great. It was great. I just got up super extra early, just a little before 4 a.m. To get in the pool in plenty of time to get a couple hour swim and run back home and come skidding into this interview. So I'm excited to be here.
Right, that's amazing. I have a load of different questions, and you're a really interesting guy. And one of them is about swimming. But before we jump into the swimming side of things, can you just give us a bit of background on yourself? You're based in Colorado there, but just tell us a little bit about yourself. And also, Brian, what was life like growing up? I think that really sets a nice tone for us this evening.
Okay, awesome. So in terms of where I'm at and kind of what I'm working on, I'm an entrepreneur. I own multiple companies. And so I also do coaching for other athletically inclined entrepreneurs and professionals, because that's just like the group that I understand, because I am that group.
Yeah, so, right.
I mean, in terms of my childhood, grew up about 20 minutes down the road from where I am now. So I really made the leap when I became an adult and moved far, far away. let's see. It's interesting. My childhood is so important. I think, like many people experience, there's periods in life where you look back on it and you might say, I would never wish that on anyone, and I would never want to have to go through it again, but it helped forge my character, especially if you really work to gain the right perspective on it and recognizing the gifts that it gave you instead of, kind of turning into a victim play. Everything that comes at us, and especially me and my childhood on the emotional front, it really drove me, particularly with respect to psychology and wanting to understand how the mind works and what drives people and what makes them do and say and think the things that they do. And that kind of set me on a journey. And I really, really love human performance, people that took what they had and maximized it, right? Like whatever that is, whether that's the people that won the genetic lottery and so they're incredible athletes and they can perform at the top world-class level, or whether that's people that did not exactly hit the genetic lottery, whether that's physically or mentally or whatever, but they went out and kicked butt, took names, and those are the kind of people I love working with.
Yeah, that's super nice. And you know, I'm a massive believer in is that our childhood really sort of paves way to who we are. It molds us. And we all have different challenges in different ways there. But one of the things that you said, mate, you went through quite an interesting sort of emotional time. And how does that, it's interesting because some people go one way, like success like you have, and you've sort of grabbed this bull by the horns, and others go the other way. So although it made you curious and intrigued you, and that's sort of where you've got to, why do you think there's that difference? Why do some go one way and some go another way?
That's a really great question. I think it's an interplay of the meaning that we make out of the things that happen to us, which is a choice. It's a mix of that, and it's a mix of grace. So, you know, for me to sit here and say, oh yeah, I went this direction because I'm so incredible, I just, like, that's kind of a load of crap. I had my part to play, but there was a lot of grace involved too. And so it's that magical play off one another that I think that's really what it kind of boils down to.
When you were, let's say, 10 or 12 years old, what did you want to be?
Oh my God, so many things. Probably this is, as you asked me the question, it started to make sense to me even at another level why I'm an entrepreneur, because there were so many things in life that excited me as potential options. You know, I remember when I was really young, I was thinking, I'm going to be a magician. And then I grew older and all these other things came into play. I think the crux of it is I wanted to find something that I could truly just settle into and be great at and go right into flow and just kind of live in that space. And so I tested and sampled a lot of different things. And I've always just had that adventurous, discovering type of a spirit, which I think is so, so, so important. That's one of the things I've been thinking about lately is we focus on gaining knowledge and information, and we want to know. And that is nowhere near as important as the desire for adventure and to discover, because when we want to know, we start to protect and we start to hoard, and we don't extend ourselves as much and constantly reaching and personally evolving. I think that's such a huge key. And the highest performers out there, there are some high performers that get to a certain peak and they plateau, and it's because they're trying to protect the lead that they have. And we see this in sports all the time. So, you know, a team gets a lead, and then they start to protect the lead and they go and start playing defense forever. And it's like, offense is working for you. Just stay on offense. Yeah. And it's something we all have to guard against, I think, every day.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, and I like those two words that you used there. We protect and we hoard. We almost get to this comfort level, and then we just try and build this big sort of defense system around us as though we're just waiting for someone to take us down, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. It becomes an ego play, right?
Right.
The ego is a really important thing in terms of just evolutionarily and helping us survive and that type of thing. We have to be careful that it doesn't, that we use it and it doesn't use us. And one of the most deceptive pieces about the ego is it convincing us that we are using it and it's not driving the ship or steering the ship, I should say. So, self-awareness is so important, as you know, which is why I love the work that you do and really looking at like the inner fight, because you're so much into the fitness play and all of that, but really recognizing that it boils down to the inner strength and the fortitude is what we're truly after, and making sure it has integrity and it's driven by the right things. When you asked me earlier about why do some people go this way and why do some people go this way, I think no matter which direction you go, you still have to recognize that if there were wounds and different things, even if they created a positive drive in you, quote unquote, a positive drive in society's eyes, there's a lot of negative fallout from that that you have to guard against and be aware of. What good does it do somebody to take it to the top level in their profession, in sport, in business, etc.? What good does that do if they completely break down and they're a psychological mess and they've never dealt with it until one day a host of factors come together and they have a complete breakdown? And so I think that, it's like we either discipline ourselves to do things or life comes in and disciplines us. And it's so much easier to coast and let life show up and do the work, but that's brutal. That's brutal. And I've done that wrong so many times that I really try and remind myself, Brian, stay on the forefront. Same thing with my clients. Stay on the forefront. Don't get lazy. Do the work.
Yeah. I think it's a very clear message. And it's, whilst not wanting to dwell too much on the times that we're in, we're really seeing that, aren't we? We're seeing some people really go on the offensive and some people just sort of standing a little bit on the back foot waiting for something to happen. And, you know, I was talking to a friend today and, you know, he was telling me how he'd set up a business a year ago. So literally when all this stuff sort of kicked off and how great it's going and his wife just got a new job in an industry that you're like, how is that even happening? And he's just gone out and he's just gone on the front foot and attacked in these crazy times. So I really believe in what you're saying, mate. We'll progress from 12 years old and maybe wanting to be a magician there to you landed up in University of Colorado. You, as you said earlier, mate, you really haven't moved far from the bush, but that's okay because I hear Colorado's amazing. And you studied psychology. Now, I'm always interested to understand why people choose the course that they choose. So this question has two parts. And was it what you thought it was going to be?
Okay. So if I forget the second question by the time I get to answer it, you're going to have to.
I'll prompt you, mate.
Why psychology? This is interesting. I think the genesis was, again, back in my childhood and wanting to understand the mechanism of the mind and understanding the power of the mind for positive or destructive ends, depending on how it is used and utilized. The other piece was, so before I got out of high school, I had my personal training certification and I was working with, so on one hand, I was working at a fitness center at a gym, working with the general public, training them. And I was also working at the university, interning with the strength and conditioning team, primarily working with the football team and athletes. Right. And I'm doing those things at the same time. And with the general public, I was just like, you gotta be freaking kidding me. Like, stop whining. I'm sick of this. Like, can I motivate people? Yes. But that, I just feel like motivation is your job. Like, come with batteries included. Don't show up and expect, like, I want to get this great result, but I'm going to dictate the terms of the exercise regimen and the nutrition, which is just a bunch of crap. And it's like, and then I'm trying to like go, don't be judgmental, be nice. Internally, that created a lot of conflict for me because at the same time working with the athletes, they showed up to play. They had to go to game day. They had to be ready. And it was a completely different universe of focus, intensity, intention. And I loved working with them. Now, to the psychology piece, I started actually, my major was kinesiology, right? Biomechanics, all that type of thing. And thank God I had just the lousiest kinesiology professor. And I started to get jaded and I was like, this is stupid. And here's why. Cause he said we had to write a paper on if you were to go into the health industry and do something with this degree, how would you get into it? How would you get into it? What would you need to do? And I thought to myself, fantastic. I've already done it. I'm already in the industry. I'm going to write about what I have already done.
Yeah.
And this is where you get into college and university being a load of crap sometimes, because this guy gave me like a C- on the paper. And I said, I'm the only person in your entire class that's actually gone out and performed. And all I did was write out the roadmap. You want theory? I'm giving you what actually works. And so I talked to him and I think he bumped me up to like a B-. And I was like, this is stupid. So I decided I got to do something else. I really loved philosophy. I still do. But psychology was what I landed on. So that's the series of events that led me there.
And the second part of the question, turn out? No, that's what I'm here for, mate. Did it turn out to be what you envisaged? Because I think it's interesting. I remember And this maybe is a little bit of a selfish question, Brian, because I remember when I was 17, 18 and having to pick what I was going to do at university. And, you know, I went down the road of sport and I often ask myself is like, what was I thinking? And did it turn out the way that I thought? And I don't know what the answer, if anyone's wondering, is I don't know what I was thinking. And therefore, it just turned out the way it did. And I didn't really think about it. You kind of just went into it. So was psychology kind of what you thought it was going to be?
No, it's kind of like life. It's just, it's not what you think it's going to be. And brilliant. The more to me that you try and control it and plan it out and make it happen the way that you envision and you get rigid, the more friction you're going to encounter. Yeah. And I think there's a balance, and that's not to say, well, just go with the flow in a lazy sense, but go with the flow in terms of being willing to follow the road where it leads you and carve a new path where it's necessary. I frankly, when I was in college, I kind of did it for my parents so they wouldn't murder me. No, just kidding. They wouldn't have done that. But I was like, you know what? I'll just finish it out. But that yeah. ended up being a really great thing for me from the standpoint of having some formal education and something I was really passionate about. But I certainly didn't anticipate using it the yeah. way that I have and where I am today. I just at the time was curious.
That's very cool. I like that a lot. I like the curiosity side of you as well, mate. We've not been talking for long, but I quite like that because I think a lot of people, and the reason I say that is I think a lot of people kind of accept what's the norm and what's taught to them as the norm, and they don't challenge it. You don't have to change the world, but you can still be a little bit curious about stuff to try and find out why. And I think when you do find out why, then you're buy into something, you're genuine buy into it, and the effectiveness of it obviously shoots through the roof. Mate, one of the things that you took a particular interest in was neuroscience. Why, like, what really does
why?
That?
Why?
Like, I mean, mate, I told you I'm curious. I'm like, it's interesting because, yeah, why?
Neuroscience. Ironic. Okay. So I was not the best at chemistry in high school and such. I remember I got in a stand-up shouting match with my chemistry teacher in high school and like just went out of the classroom, like busted out the door and all this kind of stuff. Now it was interesting because after we had that big blowout, we actually had a respect for each other and we got along famously afterward. But all that to say, chemistry was not my greatest gift. Biology I found intriguing. When I got to college and doing the university thing, starting to look at the biology and the chemistry of how our minds work and how our bodies are integrated, especially the mind stuff. I just loved learning about things like, you know, the entire dopamine cycle and how yeah. that all fits together. And it's fascinatingly complex. And it's only something that you could enjoy learning if you really loved the subject matter, which I did, because I could imagine if I really wasn't that into it.
Yeah.
Brother, that would have been excruciating.
Yeah.
It would have been excruciating. But I love the chemistry thing. I love the complexity. I love diving in deeper yeah. and really understanding more than just at a surface level how things work and why we're processing information and what's responsible for releasing different hormones and chemicals and how our bodies deal with the chemicals that are in them. The neurons, all of it, the neural networks is fascinating to me.
I can imagine, mate. I mean, and leading on from that, another question that I have sort of, as I say, related is we're hearing a lot more these days about neuroplasticity and almost remolding, rewiring the brain in certain ways. And that leads to the more common question of, you know, can we develop mental strength? And if so, how? So what's your take on it from someone that sort of studied that in that area? What is your take on the development of mental strength?
Yeah, I absolutely believe you can develop mental strength. I think the neuroplasticity thing is very interesting because, you know, a while ago, the predominant scientific consensus was that once you get to a certain age, it's the hardwiring's pretty much already in place and you're not going to change a lot about it.
Yes.
And the beauty of science is that you can prove out models, you can test things, you can do very, very, you can get into the nitty gritty and understand how things work. The problem with science is it takes forever. And so I just feel like I'm one of those people that always felt, I know that we can rewire ourselves. I know we can. I absolutely know we can. And now that, you know, of course, the science really showing that fact, it's rewarding to see those pieces come together. Inner strength is something that is developed. So is inner weakness. It's just like everything else in our lives that when we're disciplined, I do a lot with, you know, clients, people I work with on mental training. Mm. And I think that's the beauty of a lot of what you do. And even in the physical training, when you know what's really beneath it, the important thing is not the physical training. It's what you're building up your strength of character and mind and a psychology that's robust and can come back from setbacks and take something that's supposed to cripple you and turn it into something that sets you ablaze. I think it's absolutely what it's all about, man. And we can 100% change. We will change. The question is the direction that we go. And a lot of that has to do with the work that we put in on a daily basis and then relying on that other component of grace and not feeling and thinking and buying into we control our own little universe, because that theory will get shaken violently at some point if we don't question it ourselves.
You've got a really great, from what you've just said, you've actually got a really interesting example, a real life example of yourself. And one of your big phobias growing up was what we opened the show with, was swimming, that you've been doing this morning. And you actually, I mean, I'm sure you can tell us a little bit more in detail about the story. You've represented your country, you've written a book on swimming. How did you, tell us a little bit about your swimming journey, because I also find that really fascinating about you, Brian.
Absolutely. So I just to make sure that I don't take too much credit, I do want to be clear. So I did write a book. That one was on dog training, but I definitely have one in mind that's going to be related to sports performance and that type of thing. In terms of swimming, yes, it started out with, gosh, from the youngest age I can imagine. I just, all my life, if I had my head submerged underwater or something like that, I always had this issue with something that felt suffocating to me, and water was absolutely the worst. Right. And I remember watching Michael Phelps. I don't remember which Olympics it was at, probably the Beijing Olympics initially, where I saw what he put together. I was like, that's inspiring, because I always loved watching athletes perform at the upper echelons. Yeah. Just so inspiring, because you see these performances that almost transcend the level of the natural. It almost becomes something supernatural that you're watching. And it's always gotten to me. I always get choked up when I'm watching those performances that just take on a life of their own.
Yeah.
So a seed was planted there, but it wasn't until a number of years later that I got fed up and sick and tired of having a fear control me. I realized, Brian, dude, this is not you. You're the kind of person that tackles fears. What are you doing with this? And I recognized that part of it was that it was a phobia. It wasn't just a simple fear. Like, most people don't like swimming. They feel like they can't breathe, etc. Yeah, but for me, it felt like I was dying. And I just decided, like, I've got to go do this. So I got a coach who, ironically, his name is Bob Bowman, which is the name of Michael Phelps' coach too. Not the same guy.
Right. I was going to say, that's a familiar name.
Yeah. It was kind of a crazy turn of events. And he taught me how to swim all the different strokes. And one day at the end of our lesson, he said, Brian, you are ready to join a master's team.
Wow.
And I almost wet the pool because it terrified me. And I thought, you know what, I've got to go out and register and get on a master's team immediately. So I did that the next day because I knew I would talk myself out of it if I gave myself time to think.
Yeah.
And then I just got into gosh, what if I competed someday? That became this crazy idea. Like, what if I actually went to a competition and swam in one? And then eventually after I had that happen, a little while later, I said, what if I was able to ever qualify for nationals in masters swimming? Wouldn't that be incredible and maybe inspire or encourage somebody who's maybe struggling with some things that, gosh, I could take one more step, you know, if that person can do that, because that's always inspired me when I see people like Phelps I was talking about. So that's a little bit about my swimming journey.
Incredible to turn it around so vast. Like, you didn't just start enjoying it, but you then started competing and were super successful, mate. So it's I wanted to
mess that fear up. I wanted to F it up. I wanted it to have a problem. And I was like, I'm going to feed fear a suck it sandwich every single time it tries to take over. And it was just showing up day after day. And the fear was there for years, but it was like a little, it was like 1% less every couple months or something, until it became something that I actually developed momentum to love it.
Incredible. Mate, talking of books, apologies for that slight mistake I made there. A lot of people have books that talk about themselves, that are self-help books, for example, but you have a book on something that is really quite different, and it almost, it fits so nicely with what you do, but it's so sort of left field in that you have a book on dog training. Tell us a little bit about this, mate, because I was sort of reading through your bio and I'm like, this was one of the main reasons why I was like, I've got to get this guy on the show, because I was like, this, you know, high performance coach, high performer, you know, studied what you've, and dog training. So mate, what's the story?
Yeah. So the psychology that I studied and dog training go really well together, because the learning theory and all the principles of it are the same. There's differences in terms of the species and how we process information and how we function, but overall the principles pretty much hold true. So as I got out of college, I recognized that I had a gift for working with dogs in particular. And it just started really organically with me helping some friends, because it made sense to me. I could train and I could especially do behavior rehabilitation. And so I built a couple businesses in that space. I have one still that's a dog training behavior rehabilitation company. And then I have another one that's a behavior center, a dog behavior center, where we do behavior-based and pack work-based daycare and boarding. So those are two of my four businesses.
Right. Absolutely incredible. And I mean,
and I didn't tell you about the book though, is the way that ties in is it's a very different book. It's not about how to train your dog, because I felt there's a million books out there like that. And I'm not even frankly passionate necessarily about training dogs. I was always really passionate about coaching people. And so it's really a self-development book for dog owners who are looking at their dog's behavior and maybe thinking, I need to, you know, might have this get fixed about my dog, not recognizing that they're part of a system as a pack animal. And so your energy and what you bring to the table every day and how you show up and your psychology has a massive impact on your dog's behavior. So how do we marry those things together and understand how to develop ourselves to support our companion animals?
That's super cool, mate. And leads really nicely into something else that I found on your website that I wanted to ask you about, which is actually a quote which says, giving people everything they want in life is easy. All you have to do is make them realize that everything they're really after is already inside of them. And I read that a few times, Brian, and it really kind of resonated with me, because I think a lot of the time, and especially in times now, we go to the world looking for answers or looking for excuses, or we find excuses. We don't actually find any answers in the world, where we have to look within. And that's kind of similar to what you're saying from leading on from the dog. But can you elaborate a little bit more on that quote, mate, and what you really mean by it? I think that'd be super nice.
It's a quote that, on a surface level, depending on how the state of mind somebody might be in when they're reading it. They could either think that's super fantastic or kind of a load and like, oh, okay, like it's a quip. Yeah. and it's a cute saying, but what am I going to do with that? The more you really sit with it, I have found, and clients sit with that kind of thing, the more we start to recognize that as truth. And you and I are so much on the same page about this kind of thing, right? It's the, like you said, the answers are not in the world. The answers are within us. The world can be a catalyst for helping us find the answers, but the great seducing lie is that you need something out there, whether you need to gain something that's out there that you don't have the peace and the joy and the happiness and the love in your life because you don't have something out there or it's not lined up properly. There's also the component about, well, these things that you're experiencing, these negative emotions that you have, this anxiety, this depression, it's because of the world and things that are happening out there. And it's just a great big projection, right? Like we create conditions within ourselves and then we look to the world for reasons why it's happening, sometimes not recognizing that that's oftentimes subconsciously what we're doing. It's not the world that's the problem, right? And it's not the world that's the solution. We're the solution and we're the problem. And so it's funny, I was listening to a Tim Ferriss podcast a while back and I had forgot that he always asked this question, like, if you could put one thing on a billboard, what would it be? And it just immediately came to mind as I was listening to it. It was actually an interview with Michael Phelps, but my answer to that was, I would just have a gigantic mirror that says you are the problem and you are the solution.
Nice. Yeah, that's very cool, mate. One thing that you mentioned earlier, which people might have picked up on, it's sort of a little bit of a buzzword, I think, for a lot of people, is the word flow. Talk to us about flow, what it means to you. And a question that we often hear from curious people, I think, is how do I get into this state of flow that everyone's talking about? Share your thoughts on that for us, Brian.
Yes. Great question. I think the most honest answer is it depends on each individual person and our willingness as individuals to know and more deeply know ourselves, not be self-consumed or something like that. But if we're really looking to create flow states or get into flow states, looking back on our history, when are the times that I've most consistently gone there? What have been the common denominators? And it's not something for most people that happens every single day, right? So you really have to, you know, either journal or if you're really good at remembering and reflecting back on the times that you've been there the most. I think one of the things people inevitably find is it's typically related to an area of your personal gifting.
Right.
Personal gifting, you will kick into flow more frequently. And by flow, I mean, I was actually talking to my wife about this the other night, but it's something where there's like no friction. It's where everything just moves and glides and flows, and you are maybe putting forth tremendous, tremendous physical and mental effort in a sense, but at the same time, it's almost like you're detached from the effort a little bit. Not that you don't care about it, but you're just experiencing, it's like sitting in an anti-gravity chamber, maybe is the analogy that's coming to mind right now. It's like an anti-gravity chamber, but you're doing something that maybe other people find tremendously difficult. And when you're in flow, insights come through. You have a lot of intuitive awareness and you can help people and yourself and just perform at a completely different level. And I think we even, again, see that in sports. There's something that's not quite tangible. Yes, all the hard work. Yes, the grind. You have to do that. But you have to get into the grace of the flow. And that's where we see those magical performances where we just go like, what did I just see? Yeah. What did I just see?
That's an incredible way. It's one of the best ways I've ever heard it described. Thank you. That was
good. Well, I was nervous when you asked me, dude, because I was like, how am I going to answer this?
No, because it's something that's very, I think it's very difficult to explain. And I really enjoyed how you mentioned that it often happens at a time of extreme physical or mental suffering, but then all gravity is removed and we're able to keep thank you for that, mate. That was really strong. I have a couple more questions. I'm not going to keep you too much longer, Brian. I know you probably got a lot on. You're a super busy man, but I have a few other things I want to ask you. And one of them is a question that I don't know why, but I've been asked a lot recently. So I'm almost recycling it, but I think it's quite interesting. And that question is, if you could sit down and have a chat with anyone in the world, who would it be?
Probably my 80-year-old self.
Wow.
Right. Cause like, why not? That would be at the place where I've got so much perspective that we get tripped up so easily by a lack of proper perspective. And this is the whole, I don't remember whose quote it is, but life has to be lived from beginning to end, but can only be understood from the end, looking back to the beginning. Yeah. So I'd probably want to meet my 80-year-old self and have a little chat.
Well, that's the second part of my question, is you're only allowed to ask your 80-year-old self one question. It's not actually a nice chat at all. It's an opportunity to ask one question. What would you ask your 80-year-old self?
Oh, God, that's such a good question. I'm just, that's exciting.
See, in a normal world, I would send all these questions over to my guest before, but I don't, and it's funny because I was actually being interviewed earlier today and I got this big list of questions and I actually, and hopefully she might listen to the show or she might not. I actually never even read through them because I was like, I think sometimes when you prepare, we do what humans are good at and we overcomplicate and we overthink stuff. So I'm almost like, I just quite like asking people off the cuff questions. So is that one thing? What is that one thing you would ask your 80-year-old self?
What do I need to do to live from a place where I offer the maximum amount of love and compassion for myself and others instead of being so hard on myself?
Wow. That's very cool, mate. Very, very cool. You must, I'm presuming that you read a lot. Give us, you talking about Eckhart Tolle on your Instagram, which was the back end of last year. What are sort of some of the best books that you can recommend to people? I'm draining energy out of you here, Brian. We want to know all the secrets. What are your sort of top books that you recommend, or authors that people that you've really liked over the last year or so, maybe, or even longer?
Yeah, absolutely. So Paramahansa Yogananda is phenomenal. Autobiography of a Yogi is probably the most accessible. There are some other works that he had that are fantastic. There's one that's like the second coming of Christ about the resurrection within you, but that's like a 1700 page two book volume, so it's a little bit dense. Autobiography of a Yogi is really exciting. Eckhart Tolle, obviously. Who else? I'm looking over at a stack of some of my books. One that I've been listening to right now is Awareness by Anthony D. Oh Lord, I want to get this right for people, so I'm going
to get it quickly. We'll give you a little bit of time. It's just a question that I also get asked a lot. It's like, what books should I read? And I have a whole list on my website, so I'm always super interested.
Yeah. So Anthony DeMello, Awareness, and it's a great audiobook. So I'd probably recommend that format for it personally. I really found fascinating Michael Pollan's book on How to Change Your Mind. It's about the sort of the new science of psychedelics in the realms of coping with anxiety and depression and people with end of life fear and stuff like that. It's just, again, me being the neurochemistry guy was able to nerd out on that, but it was incredibly entertaining. So those are the first that come to mind.
Cool. I want you to get out your crystal ball a little bit here, Brian, before we wrap up. I just have two questions. I was asking people a lot sort of towards the end of last year, like, what's 2021 going to be? And, you know, but one thing that that actually popped up and I did ask a few people is what, and I want to ask you this question is, what will 2025 look like? We're 4 years away from it. What, with the state of things now, and I think we should both sort of give ourselves a little pat on the back. We've touched on COVID, but it really hasn't been the point of our conversation. So we've done well there. But with everything that's going on in the world right now, where do you see things in, you know, in 2025? On any level.
That's a phenomenal question. Yeah, I love it. I think that it's really going to boil down to how we respond to things. You know, we had 2020 happen, and like you were saying at the outset, there's very different responses from people going through essentially the same type of situation, right? Mm. Because you could take 10 people that basically have very, very similar situations, were affected in the same way by 2020 in terms of what happened out in the world, but very different responses to it, and therefore Absolutely. Very different outcomes for themselves. I look at disruption as a tremendous gift. I do not think that it is fun to go through, but that's one of the biggest things about perspective. You know, 2020 for me, yes, in a lot of ways was like a dumpster fire, but really if people ask me honestly, what do I think about it? I'm like, it was one of the most profound and just greatest years for personal evolution, because so much in life was disrupted that when things get shaken up, it gives you an opportunity to kind of dive in to see completely different things, to reevaluate, to reconstitute. I think that's so important. So I really think 2025, I don't have a great crystal ball on that. What I can tell you is it's going to be largely related to people's on a mass level ability to embrace the uncertainty and the disruption that we're going through right now, and to either make something beautiful out of it or to kind of tank. And really that goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, right? Like what's going to be the separator? Most people, if we're dead honest, cannot handle even moderate levels of things being insecure in the world.
Yeah.
And I understand that too. We all desire for having a sense of stability, but stability never, ever, ever springboards you into growth the way that instability and disruption will.
I love it. Right. Amazing. I have one final question. And before I do that, I just want to acknowledge you. I want to appreciate you for everything you've shared and for giving us your time, mate. I think that's one of the most amazing things that as humans we can give to each other, as well as an incredible amount of knowledge. So thank you for that. I want to wrap it up with a question, which again is a big and broad question. And yes, it would be different if I'd have sent it over, but you're allowed to leave us with one final piece of advice. What is your best piece of advice?
Take whatever you heard in this interview that sparked something within you and run with it, but it has to be the thing that scares you the most. Don't pick something easy. Don't pick something convenient where you think, that's really great. That's motivating, because motivation has a very short shelf life. Take the thing that kind of hits you, but if you're honest with yourself and you sit down, scares you a little bit. So that's going to be different for every single person, but that would be my sincere hope, that I really want people to take that, run with it, and love what comes out of it.
Amazing. Mate, thank you so much. As I said, thanks for your time. Thanks for your knowledge. Thanks for your energy. If people do want to connect with you, Brian, what's the best place to find you?
Yeah, absolutely. And real quick, I want to thank you too, Mark, because you're fantastic. I love what you're doing. I love your spirit, your energy, the way that you think, and just the interviews you do. All the work is amazing. So anyway, if people want to connect with me, they can go to bergfordperformance.com. That's the best way to do it. I'm on social media from very much a necessary evil standpoint. But, bergfordperformance.com, Bergford spelled like iceberg and Ford, like the car. So bergfordperformance.com. Amazing. Make sure they're on my email list, because that's how I stay in contact with people. They can get free access to my app through that has a ton of mental training stuff loaded in it that is free. So check that out.
I will put a link to that in the show notes, and folks, do go and have a look around bergfordperformance.com. There's a load going on over there, like you say, mate. So thank you, Brian. Have a fantastic day, mate. And again, thank you so much for being on the show and for giving us your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really, really grateful for this opportunity. You have an awesome rest of your morning, but it's nighttime, so enjoy the rest of your night.
I'm off to bed, buddy.
All right,
take it easy. Thanks a lot, Brian. Appreciate it, mate. Cheers.
Take care. Bye.